Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Here comes the
dog. Yeah, we are standing by today, waiting for President Trump to make his announcement, his selection for a nominee for the Supreme Court of the United States. That's expected tonight at 9 o'clock. We're going to have live coverage beginning at 8 p.m. here on News Radio WRVA. But this morning, we want to talk to Stephen Farnsworth, professor of political science and the director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies at the University of Mary Washington, the author of the book Presidential Communication and Character. And Stephen, glad to have you here. What do you make of the four names who have been listed as the most likely choices for the president tonight?
Well, I think all four of them are relatively safe choices for the president. You're looking at four people who've already been confirmed by the Senate for appeals court, lower court positions, and that is makes them somewhat well-known categories. I think that one of the weaknesses of the Trump presidency sometimes has been looking to people who don't have enough experience in government to take positions. And then, as with the case of some of the people who've left pretty quickly, it's kind of blown up in his face. And so I think the four choices that we're talking about today all seem to be more likely than not to face confirmation, even though Democrats don't like any one of them.
Yeah. Brett Kavanaugh, Raymond Kettledge, Amy Coney Barrett, and Thomas Hardiman. And all of them, I guess, you know, if you have been a judge and you're in the public sphere, there are bound to be some things you have ruled on which would make you a target for political opponents to try to beat you up. It strikes me this Amy Coney Barrett has been singled out in an odd way over the last week. What do you make of the criticism, or at least critique? Maybe it's not criticism, but the critique that's been offered of her and her personal life and her religious life.
Well, I think that the issue has become so visible in her case because she is perhaps the most strident religious figure of the four in terms of her background as an activist of pro-life and her very extensive writings with respect to religion compared to the other three. Mm-hmm. She's also been on the appeals court for the shortest amount of time, and her nomination pretty recently, about a year ago, was controversial for this lower court position. And so you have folks like Sean Hannity who are pushing her, so she's clearly in the final round and being taken seriously by the president. But the challenge, I think, for President Trump is to figure out a way to thread the needle, to offer up a conservative nominee that is going to be relatively easily confirmed, at the same time offering up a conservative nominee that is going to have a lot of enthusiasm on the part of conservatives. I think that one of the reasons why Donald Trump is president today is because when he was a candidate for president, he put forward a list of about two dozen seriously conservative choices that he would put forward if he were president on these court opportunities. And that list, I think, really convinced a lot of Republicans who may not have been all that enthusiastic about Trump that he is a genuine conservative. And so I think what you see is a rollout of a promise that he made to Republicans back in the days when he was a candidate back in 2016. And so you have those names going forward. But no doubt about it, she would be the most controversial pick of the four.
We're talking to Stephen Farnsworth, a professor of political science at the University of Mary Washington. Let me ask you about the concerns that are popping up about President Trump having a one-on-one meeting with Vladimir Putin in the coming week. Why would the president choose this moment to have this sort of one-on-one meeting with the leader of Russia? It sounds like there's no deliverable that necessitates that meeting. So why do it? It you know, from a press standpoint, the job that I used to have, I would say, hey, why give the media an opportunity to rehash all these negative stories, true or untrue, about collusion with Russia? Why do that? Just get the guy on the phone. You don't have to deal with the same press coverage. Am I missing something?
I think the real challenge of working on Donald Trump's White House team is being listened to. I think you're exactly right. From the public relations standpoint, it does not make sense to go out of your way to talk to Putin in a very public and very visible way. I mean, after all, these folks can talk on the phone away from the kind of scrutiny that the president would get with the kind of face-to-face meeting that's going to happen later this week. Politically speaking, it's not. It's just not smart, as you mentioned. There is a, you know, and you can see that from the backlash that those Republican senators who were in talking in Moscow last week, in terms of their public relations, they spent the 4th of July in Russia.
Yeah,
that they were being seen as. Somewhat less focused on America and more focused on Russia. I mean, it's important to remember, you know, take a step back here. I mean, Russia is a country that has violated international norms over and over again. If you think about the situation in Crimea or in the Donbas regions of Ukraine, Ukraine is an independent country, but Russia invades it like it's their backyard.
Right.
And the West has put forward sanctions and a whole bunch of other things. I mean, it is truly a horrific situation for the people in Crimea and in the Donbas region of Ukraine to face this Russian occupation and to walk away from sanctions or to talk about weakening them. This is not productive. I think that Russia needs to be treated like the pariah state that it should be for this continuing occupation. And it's not the only place where Russia is a threat to peace. If you look at the extent to which you have Russian occupation of Georgia, another nearby country, if you look at the continuing investigation with respect to the Mueller study of what Russia might have tried to do to manipulate the 2016 election, I mean, even though we don't have any evidence right now about whether or not Trump was involved, it is clear from guilty pleas and other things that the Russians were trying to manipulate election in 2016 to help Trump, and there were people on the Trump team who were willing to work with the Russians. We know that much. It is absolutely a poor political choice for Donald Trump to do this. But what Donald Trump is doing is what Donald Trump often does. He's making his own judgments about what he thinks makes sense. And if someone tells him not to do something, that increases, it seems, the likelihood he's actually going to do it.
It may make him double down. It does seem like that. Stephen Farnsworth from the University of Mary Washington. Always appreciate having you on the show. Thank you.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.